so wonderful and comfortable, 'cause we were powerful and in control. Then daddy's judges came through and they appointed me the president, with no precedent, Pennsylvania Avenue resident. So I entered a world that was full of complexity, far too much for me. I never got beyond dichotomy. How ironic it was that I would lead a democracy without diplomacy, in many ways an aristocracy. At 9 p.m. I go to sleep, since questions run too deep for such a simple man. Cheney.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Talks continue between the Communication Workers of America and phone giant SBC. All 102,000 line maintenance, directory assistants, and other technical staff scattered throughout 13 states will stay on the job for the time being. The deadline to come to agreement on a new contract expired this weekend, but is being extended on a day-by-day basis, so long as talks between the two sides, with the assistance of federal mediation, remain active. The CWA says it'll also give 24 hours notice before taking any job action now. In related news, one of SBC's major competitors is cutting back on staff. MCI announced this week it'll lay off 7,500 people by the end of the year. That's 15% of the MCI workforce and an increase of 3,000 cuts over and above those previously planned for the year.
A regional office of the National Labor Relations Board dealt a blow to Wisconsin United Food and Commercial Workers Local 538 with a ruling that could end union representation at the Jefferson Tyson plant. Workers there were on strike for nearly a year, ending last January after they accepted a four-year contract that differed little from the one that originally caused their walkout. According to the NLRB ruling, all 300 replacement workers hired during the strike must be made permanent. Now, replacement workers are lobbying the NLRB to deauthorize the Tyson Union. Only the 300 replacement workers and about 200 called-back strikers will be allowed to vote. Therefore, union members will be outnumbered, and if Tyson wins, they most likely won't have to rehire union members or give them back pay.
A jobs boom may be just around the corner in Canada, but only for tattoo artists behind bars. It's related to a pilot program starting this year by the Correctional Service of Canada. It's going to put tattoo parlors in prisons around the country. The ultimate goal is to cut the hepatitis C epidemic in the prison system, which is blamed in large part on homemade ink jobs done by untrained cellmates. Six prisons in all will get tattoo parlors this year. Inmates will be trained to run them, but the government will hold censorship control over designs that glorify violence or gangs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most recent census identified nearly 44 million Americans without health insurance, but that's only half the story. A report released this month from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation says nearly half of them, almost 20 million in all, have jobs but no benefits. This dispels the myth that uninsured must also mean unemployed. In 37 states and the District of Columbia, one in every 10 working adults has no health benefits. But the problem is worst in Texas, where one in four are uninsured.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
As Ray Charles sang, "Them that's got is them that gets." And the getting was very, very good for those at the top in 2003. Forbes magazine's annual survey of wealth reports that there are now 587 lucky souls living in Billionaireville, up 10% over the previous count. These wealthiest of the wealthy added half a trillion dollars to their personal stash of lucre last year. Among this group of swells are the Waltons, the reigning heirs of Walmart founder Sam Walton. Interestingly, the company that profits by paying poverty wages to its employees returns a king's ransom to those at the top. Forbes reports that of the 10 richest people on the planet, 5 are Waltons, each one sitting atop $20 billion in Walmart booty. Then there are the CEOs who lavish corporate cash on themselves. These dandies now average nearly $11 million in annual pay, even as they downsize their workforce, cut health care and pensions for the people who do the work, and ship our country's best-paying jobs off to foreign shores. Numero uno in corporate pay last year was Sandy Wheel, head of Citigroup. He only worked 9 months of the year before retiring in October, but he pocketed $30 million in salary. Wow, that's $111,000 a day. And that doesn't count the $14.7 million he took in other compensation, or some $285 million worth of stock he had been awarded. Well, say apologists for this system of royal pay, such is the way the free market works. Horse feathers. The supply of potential CEOs is huge, and the number of slots is very small. So if the free market really was at work, CEOs would be making an honest wage. But the system isn't honest. The pay of top bosses is set by board members handpicked by you-know-who, the top bosses. This is Jim Hightower saying, money flows uphill not because of merit, but because the system is rigged by those at the top.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void or prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 year old with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system. You see in the news, I think it was this morning, they just 400,000 users now for Sirius. And beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Welcome to our program. It is day 967 in the search for Osama bin Laden. In the second hour of our show today, by the way, we're going to ask the question, why do the conservatives insist on misinterpreting John Kennedy to justify their insane economic policies that are wiping out the middle class? We're going to have on Chuck Morse, the conservative talk show host, candidate for the United States Congress, running against Barney Frank right now in Massachusetts, and regular Newsmax contributor, to argue that topic, as it were. Well, let's say to discuss it. But in our first hour, to open the show here, I'm very pleased to have a man on who is one of my heroes. David Brock is the author of four political books, including the forthcoming The Republican Noise Machine, Right-Wing Media and How It Corrupts Democracy. And we've gotten what I think is an advanced copy of the audiobook of this, and I've listened to a good chunk of it. And it is great. It is absolutely great. He's also the author of Blinded by the Right, which was just, you know, reading that book was an epiphany for me. Not that I didn't have lots and lots of suspicions and, you know, that there was a lot of evidence out there already, but boy, he just laid it out, you know, the whole thing, particularly the SCAFE connection, just extraordinary. So David Brock, welcome to our program today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
And you have a new venture now, Media Matters for America. We've actually used a few of your clips here on the program. Great stuff. Tell us how this came about.
Well, actually, Media Matters for America is a progressive research center that monitors and analyzes and corrects conservative misinformation in the media, and we post our results as quickly as we can to a website, mediamatters.org. And I got the idea to start the organization actually writing my new book, The Republican Noise Machine, because some point during the research for that book, I realized that while books are great, a book really wasn't going to be enough to try to actually stem the tide of all the conservative misinformation, that one could trace the history of it, which I tried to do, and one could document it, which I tried to do. But that the offenders, shall we say, would just keep on doing what they were doing unless there was a daily effort to accumulate the evidence that's in front of us. You know, anyone listening to most of talk radio, watching any of the cable news channels, looking at a lot of the high-traffic political internet sites were just awash in this conservative misinformation. I felt there needed to be an organization that could begin, at least incrementally, to try to push back on this, because I think it's a real threat to democracy. That our poll, if people go to our site, the poll we released on the day we launched last Monday, and other polls have shown that the issue here is that people are receiving false and wrong information from many of these media outlets.
And so many of them believe it.
Excuse me?
And so many of them believe it.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
It's just incredible.
One of the statistics in our poll showed that the Limbaugh audience overwhelmingly believes and listens to Limbaugh to receive information rather than to be entertained. And I think that is contrary to a lot of conventional thought that Rush may just be funny and people are just going there to be amused. But it's actually a major news source.
Yeah, yeah, and the studies that have been done that show that the majority of people who listen to faux news or listen to right-wing talk radio, for example, believe that there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and we found them, you know.
Yeah, so that's exactly the kind of data I'm referring to. We have a question like that in our poll as well, and yeah, so it's a... We're not talking about just, you know, everybody makes mistakes. We're not talking about what we're talking about. We are talking about a systematic effort by what I call the Republican noise machine in the book that is... began to be established more than 30 years ago to systematically pump the media filled with right-wing propaganda.
Yeah, yeah, well done. And, you know, on the right-wing side, for years there have been a couple of sites. There's one in particular that I'm missing their name right now, but we've used their material on the show quite a few times because what they do is they'll take... I mean, every day, what's the name of it? Anyway, every day they're like checking out all the newscasts, and they'll say, Dan Rather was biased again today. And they take things so badly out of context and then distort them to make their point. And what you're doing is actually providing the context. I mean, yesterday, you know, you had Rush going on and on and on. I think it was yesterday, maybe the day before yesterday, about, you know, well, these dogs, they're not hurting anybody. And then you also had him sort of pseudo-apologizing. You know, I mean, you're providing fair and balance is such a it's dangerous to say, but I mean, you're actually doing a good job of laying this stuff out without the obvious agenda that is found on the right-wing sites. I salute you for that. I'm really
right. Well,
impressed.
We're trying to achieve that tone, and we're trying to document what we say, and we are obviously we've put in place a system, I think, for the first time to do some systematic recording and transcribing. For example, of Rush Limbaugh, and we did catch last week the first time he began to comment and defend the torture and abuse that went on in Iraq as nothing worse than what goes on in the Skull and Bones initiation and that people were having a good time, etc. And so we try to give you we have the transcript, and we actually in that case sent Rush's own website had part of that transcribed himself.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to educate people about a statement like that. He is the most listened to political commentator in America, and I think on its face not a credible statement, and so I think people need to be aware of that, and we are trying to be rigorous and disciplined about this, and what you're referring to, I think, is the Media Research Center, which is
yes.
a right-wing outfit
yes, that, thank you.
You know, spends $6 million a year on these allegations of liberal bias, but I think if you look at it, and what you're saying is absolutely right, it's a very subjective and slippery term, and there's no evidence. It's what they think they're seeing, but they may not be seeing it, and they don't really document anything. And so we tried to move away from the issue of bias, which is very difficult to nail down, and talk about misinformation.
How do you, it may sound like an odd question, it's actually, we have a live chat room that runs while we're on the air, and one of the folks in our chat room just, and also, you know, people can call in, but one of our folks in our chat room just said, how did David Stafford's listen to that bilge all day without going nuts? I mean, do you have to provide, like, regular psychotherapy?
How did who listen to it?
How do your employees or the people working with you listen to this stuff? I mean,
I certainly in the interviewing process, I certainly warned people that, you know, they were going to be inundated and they were going to have to make it their life's work and be consumed with this kind of material, and it can be depressing. I listened to an awful lot of conservative talk radio while I was writing my new book, The Republican Noise Machine, and one of the things I realized was that it operates with almost total impunity, because it's very difficult a few days later to really nail down what was said.
Right.
And so I felt that there had to be a system in place. But of course, if the system's in place, then there's manpower needed to actually listen and go through the transcripts.
Yeah, I had this vision of it being like the old pictures that we saw back during the controllers strike when it first came out. You know, during the Reagan era, when it first came out that the Chicago Tower had a big fishbowl full of Tums
that
these guys would just like chow down all day long because their job was so stressful, you know. And
I had
this picture of the guys at Media Matters, you know, and with this big fishbowl full of Tums or Valium or something. I don't know what
that's
it would
right.
be.
That's right. You know, someone has to do it.
Yeah. Well, I congratulate you on it. And we found the website very useful. It's a little hard to print, but I'm sure you're going to be fixing that.
In our very first iteration. I just felt a lot of urgency to lift this off the ground because obviously there's so much critical coverage going on to our democracy in this election year, and so we're trying to improve it every day.
Yeah, we're talking to David Brock of Media Matters. By the way, just as an FYI, one way to do that is to make the 800 pixels wide, make your screen site no more than 800 pixels wide, and that way anybody can just print. Anyhow, we're talking with David Brock. MediaMatters.org is his new website, his new organization. He also has a new book out, The Republic. Is it out or is it coming out?
It will be out next week.
Next week, The Republican Noise Machine, Right-Wing Media, and How It Corrupts Democracy. This is one of the books that you have to get this year. It's absolutely extraordinary. David, from your book, if we can talk for just a second, The Republican Noise Machine, one of the first revelations, you know, I'd heard this before, but you just laid it out so nicely. I'd like you to repeat it. The extraordinary lengths to which the right wing goes to promulgate lies, to assassinate character, how they converted Al Gore from a, as you say, from a Boy Scout into a pathological liar in the minds of Americans.
Right. Yes. I mean, you're right that this has been told, but I almost feel it cannot be told enough.
Yeah, because this has become part of mainstream lore. I mean, half of Democrats believe this.
You just took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say it's a very important story for progressives to understand, because I believe, you know, I've been in the conservative movement I was in there for about 10 years, and I've been out for about 7. And one of my observations is that there are a number of progressives who unfortunately tend to blame their own issues or their own candidates, in other words, the victims of this machinery, rather than like trying to understand the root of the problem. Because there's a pattern here. I mean, the Clintons were subject to this barrage, which I wrote about in Blinded by the Right, but so is Gore, and so has been Senator Daschle, and now John Kerry. And so there's obviously, it almost doesn't matter what the name is or what the facts are. It's just, it's the system that's in place that will do the smearing. And the Gore is a classic example, and he actually laid it out very well 2 years after the election when he discussed what had happened to him. But to make a long story short, I mean, the Republicans realized they could not win that election on the issues and that they had to assassinate Gore's character. And so they literally created a caricature of Gore as a liar, as someone who had trouble telling the truth, as someone who had no integrity. And they marketed it through the distortion of his actual quotations, such as, he never said, of course, I think people know this by now, that he never said he invented the Internet. And yet that, and it's not just the right-wing media. I mean, this became a talking point, and it echoed.
But that quote first appeared in a Republican press release.
That's right. It came from Eric Alterman's book, which is also great. What liberal media also has actually a lot more on this than I do. It came right out of the Republican National Committee, and then it kind of takes on a life of its own through the delivery system that the right wing has. So if something is misreported, and, you know, misreporting goes on all the time, but then they're able to take that and they're able to really drum it into the consciousness of the country. A lot of that has to do with the fact that as you well know, and I've read your writing on this as well, but the almost complete domination of the, this is a noise machine, of, yeah, of the Republican right on the radio airwaves, and certainly now on with the Fox News channel, and then the effect that Fox has, as others have noted, on the other cable channels, they have a way of echoing this so that, you know, all throughout the country, and people who, look, let's face it, you know, how many people don't read the New York Times every day? An awful lot of people. And so there's this echo effect of misinformation, the Drudge Report and all these other places. And so literally within a news cycle, the whole country could be awash in a false story that's then promoted again and again. And the fact is that there were misstatements and falsehoods.
David, let me interrupt. I'm sorry,
we have Bush that were never really discussed at all in the
Excuse me, David. We have hard breaks on this show.
Sure.
We got to take a break here. I know that you could only be with us for a few minutes. Can you stick around for another 5 minutes or so?
Sure.
Great. We've got a 4 minute break here, and then we'll have 5 minutes to talk. It'll take us to the bottom of the hour. We're talking with David Brock. He's got a new book, The Republican Noise Machine, Right Wing Media, and MediaMatters.org. Stay tuned. It's Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
Lancers, bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
You don't have to run away. You got to get active is what you've got to do. Get out there, get involved, participate in the political process. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 25 minutes past the hour. We're talking with David Brock, the author of Blinded by the Right, his new book, The Republican Noise Machine, Right-Wing Media and How It Corrupts Democracy, as well as several others. He's the president and CEO of Media Matters for America, which you can find at MediaMatters.org, and I recommend you check it out every single day. David, you and I have traveled similar paths in different time frames. Back in 1963, I read None Dare Call It Treason by John Stormer, and I got all alarmed about the communists were coming to get us in 64, worked on Barry Goldwater's campaign. I was reading Russell Kirk. I was reading, William F. Buckley. In fact, I corresponded with him. I quoted him in one of my books. Very into it. And then by 67, I think it was, 66 or 67, the war in Vietnam had completely radicalized me in the other direction, and I've been a liberal, I guess, ever since then.
Oh no!
But yeah, isn't it great? Anyhow, you've gone through this this similar kind of a epiphanous experience in a little more recent era.
Sure.
And you chronicle that so brilliantly in Blinded by the Right. Any of our listeners who have not read that book, even though it's not the book du jour, it's not the new book of the year, it's also well worth reading. You talked about how Gore was turned into a liar. What about Howard Dean? They did the same thing with him, didn't they?
Oh yeah, there's an example in my book which was actually originally reported by Bob Summerbee at the Daily Howler website, which is a terrific source of information. To make a long story short, Charles Krauthammer, who's a conservative, widely syndicated columnist, column appears in places like the Washington Post, and I only say that because again, this is not just right wing media. This is
it's everywhere,
spread into mainstream places that are otherwise credible. He reported an interview that Howard Dean had done from Hardball, and there were ellipses in the column. And if you went back and looked at what was missing, what was taken out in the ellipses, it inverted the meaning, it inverted the point that Krauthammer was trying to make. And so this is a kind of it's just a grossly dishonest tactic that he was called on. And so that kind of thing did go on with Howard Dean. And I think I was finished writing before the Dean scream happened, and then at least two news organizations conceded that they had grossly overplayed that. So that seems to be.
And now they're doing it to John Kerry, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we documented. I guess it was probably 2 weeks ago now. What we talk about is a food chain where some baseless assertion based on a conservative caricature will show up. In this case, the so-called story that Kerry had flown in at great expense, a fancy hairstylist before his appearance on Meet the Press. And that appears unsourced on the Drudge Report. And I believe, I'm doing this from memory, it's on our website if people are interested, but I believe the chain was, it appears on Drudge, and then Jay Leno makes a joke of it, and then AP and the Reuters news service, they write the item up based on the Leno joke. So it's getting into the bloodstream of the media.
Yeah, it's just like Gore inventing
claims. Fox claims they independently confirmed it, but again, no sourcing, and so we don't know what to make of that. And so it's on Fox and it's on Brit Hume, and so then it's not a huge piece of misinformation, but it's the accumulation of these, what I call death by a thousand cuts, that they specialize in, which is to chip away with these baseless assertions to create a caricature that serves their agenda.
And the solution is for people to go to MediaMatters.org or to check out David Brock's new book, The Republican Noise Machine. It's excellent. David, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I very much appreciate you showing up. Keep doing the great work. This is just an absolutely wonderful website you got there.
Thanks.
And,
I appreciate it.
We're very honored to have
Bye-bye.
You around. Thanks. Do good. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Talks continue between the Communication Workers of America and phone giant SBC. All 102,000 line maintenance, directory assistants, and other technical staff scattered throughout 13 states will stay on the job for the time being. The deadline to come to agreement on a new contract expired this weekend, but is being extended on a day-by-day basis, so long as talks between the two sides, with the assistance of federal mediation, remain active. The CWA says it'll also give 24 hours notice before taking any job action now. In related news, one of SBC's major competitors is cutting back on staff. MCI announced this week it'll lay off 7,500 people by the end of the year. That's 15% of the MCI workforce and an increase of 3,000 cuts over and above those previously planned for the year.
A regional office of the National Labor Relations Board dealt a blow to Wisconsin United Food and Commercial Workers Local 538 with a ruling that could end union representation at the Jefferson Tyson plant. Workers there were on strike for nearly a year, ending last January after they accepted a four-year contract that differed little from the one that originally caused their walkout. According to the NLRB ruling, all 300 replacement workers hired during the strike must be made permanent. Now, replacement workers are lobbying the NLRB to deauthorize the Tyson Union. Only the 300 replacement workers and about 200 called-back strikers will be allowed to vote. Therefore, union members will be outnumbered, and if Tyson wins, they most likely won't have to rehire union members or give them back pay.
A jobs boom may be just around the corner in Canada, but only for tattoo artists behind bars. It's related to a pilot program starting this year by the Correctional Service of Canada. It's going to put tattoo parlors in prisons around the country. The ultimate goal is to cut the hepatitis C epidemic in the prison system, which is blamed in large part on homemade ink jobs done by untrained cellmates. Six prisons in all will get tattoo parlors this year. Inmates will be trained to run them, but the government will hold censorship control over designs that glorify violence or gangs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most recent census identified nearly 44 million Americans without health insurance, but that's only half the story. A report released this month from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation says nearly half of them, almost 20 million in all, have jobs but no benefits. This dispels the myth that uninsured must also mean unemployed. In 37 states and the District of Columbia, one in every 10 working adults has no health benefits. But the problem is worst in Texas, where one in four are uninsured.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, maybe you caught the news story or saw the testimony, Rumsfeld testimony before Congress the other day. Yesterday, day before, well, we don't forget which it was anyway. Time goes by so fast. And it's so much fun. By the way, they haven't started talking about sex in the chat room yet, and we're 30 minutes into the show. I'm impressed, you guys. Good going. You can get to our chat room if you want. To go to TomHartmann.com and just click on the chat button. It'll drop you into the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. If you have an AOL or CompuServe screen name, just plug that and your password in. If you don't, you can sign up for one right there. No credit card, no cost, nothing like that. Very simple. It's free. But you do have to sign up, and that's just to keep trolls out, you know. Anyhow, and conservatives are welcome as well as liberals. 26 minutes before the hour. So anyhow, as I started to say, you probably saw Rumsfeld testifying. And the main point of Rumsfeld's testimony was that not that he was, well, let me get this in the right order here. He acknowledged that he had known about what was happening in the Abu Ghraib prison starting last year, essentially. I mean, the first reports came from the Red Cross nearly a year ago, actually, about U.S. Problems in Afghanistan. And the Red Cross has been complaining steadily about our concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay. And starting back in October, November of last year, a lot of these allegations started coming out from GIs themselves. Rumsfeld, he said he knew about this. But he said that the big problem, and this is where he essentially laid the blame. I mean, if you just cut through all the nonsense, the big problem was pictures appeared. He said, you know, we held a news conference back in January, and we told the world. Of course, it was only six sentences. U.S. is investigating some problems at the Abu Ghraib prison. That's a tough one to pronounce if you want to say it the way that they actually say it. Abu Ghraib. Anyhow, so in response to this, now we have this news story from BorowitzReport.com. U.S. to court-martial disposable camera. Kodak Funsaver 35 snapped abuse pictures is the subhead. As Andy Borowitz wrote, a disposable camera that allegedly took humiliating photos at Abu Ghraib prison will be court-martialed in Baghdad next week, the Pentagon confirmed today. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld told reporters, the camera that took these humiliating photos must be brought to justice. If, in fact, it is determined that the Kodak Funsaver 35 did this heinous deed, then it must pay the ultimate price. By putting the camera on trial in Baghdad and broadcasting the proceedings around the globe, the White House hopes to show the Arab world that the U.S. is serious about bringing the Abu Ghraib wrongdoers to justice. But in the tiny hamlet of Patutaville, Louisiana, where the camera was first purchased, residents expressed shock and disbelief that the Kodak Funsaver 35 could be responsible for such abhorrent photos. Frank Tuland, a lifetime Patutaville resident who recalls seeing the Funsaver 35 in the local 7-Eleven, told reporters, I knew the camera I knew was not capable of taking those pictures. Mr. Tuland said he fears that the Pentagon is turning the Funsaver into a scapegoat, adding, they should be court-martialing the film, not the poor camera. In a related story, the Republican National Committee announced today that their August nominating convention will now take place in Abu Ghraib prison instead of Madison Square Garden. Explaining the choice of Abu Ghraib, a Republican spokesman said it would send a strong message of support for President Bush's Iraq policies and that the prison was safer than New York City, that liberal bastion. Thank you, Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the program. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Not a great deal, Tom, and I've heard that Kodak is actually trying to place blame on the makers of the lens.
Yeah, there you go. No, it's the chip maker. These were digital cameras, actually, well, apparently. It must be Intel. That's who it is.
Good of you to have Mr. Brock on. He's a fine writer. I'm as someone who participates and listens to a great deal of right-wing talk radio from a liberal perspective, I've found out a thoughtful, measured response is only appealing to thoughtful, measured people, you know. We on the left, we seem to keep attempting to formulate logic against what is really a hardline marketing campaign, and that's the core of what Rush and Hannity and Gordon Liddy and the rest of them do.
Oh, yeah, you're going to hear it in the next hour of this program when Chuck Morse comes on and starts sharing with us the right-wing line.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in the people that are talented in that area, it is entertaining. I mean, your show here is entertaining because you're entertaining, you're engaging, and people who have talent on the left in the radio area, you know, the Randy Rhodes and the Ed Schultzes of the world, do well, and those that don't won't do well. Good radio is good radio as it is, but it is a marketing campaign, yeah. And it, because they parrot one another, it becomes very clear if you listen for any length of time.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, with the daily memo from Roger Ailes coming down right. at Fox News and the reports from the Heritage Foundation, you know, they get their talking points down. And the thing that's different about the talking points that I get from the cons versus the talking points I get from liberals or from Democrats is that the conservative talking points tend not to be based in... I was going to say facts and logic. It's really more than that. They tend to present things, like you said, as if it was marketing. They use buzzwords and inflammatory rhetoric,
yeah.
and they frame the issue very often with straw man arguments, like the president says we're not going to cut and run. Well, who said we should?
Well, it is oversimplification. It is a repetition of buzzwords. You're right. But that's why we turn to you. Hey, thanks, yeah. man.
Well, thank you, Chris, and good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Did you see Doonesbury today, by the way? This is great. Zipper and what's his name? The kid who worked for the CIA. I'm forgetting his name. Anyhow, they're sitting there at Walden's at college. You know, these guys are at college. And the one says to the other, he says, I don't know why anyone would cheat to graduate. I mean, with all the talk of the draft being reinstated, who wants to leave college? And then he goes on, he says, I want my deferment, just like my heroes, Dick Cheney and Rush Limbaugh and Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl and Bill O'Reilly and Tom DeLay and Dennis Hastert. And the other guy goes, yeah, me too. I want my deferments, just like my heroes. So what's happening in Iraq this week? NATO. This is going to become. It already is. I mean, let's just face it. It already is. And the majority of Americans now are figuring that out, are figuring out what the majority of the world has known all along, and that is that Bush essentially lied us into this war. I'd say it's important that we not forget his comments. You know, for example,
first I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons. While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone. Because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of stuff. Here's another one.
If we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today...
And we do?
And we do.
Oh, we do. Oh.
Does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
You know, I have this childish impulse to yell, liar, liar, pants on fire, but I will resist it. Anyhow, the rest of the world was saying, we have Hans Blix over there, and he's got 320 people with him, and they're searching the country, and Saddam is going along with it. Hussein turned over 12,000 pages of documents to the United Nations. For some bizarre reason, the U.S. took possession of them and redacted, eliminated, blacked out 9,000 of those pages. Of course, those being the pages that listed all of the American companies and the Bush 1 administration's complicity in arming Saddam Hussein before they gave it to the U.N., and it melted down. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's go to Joe in Texas. Hey, Joe, you disagree with me.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm just listening to your comments you were talking about. I'm a conservative, and I listen to both sides of the story. I try to get a little bit more balance, and I listen to you, I listen to Alex Bennett, I listen to that, what's her name, Lynn Smith, or whatever her name is,
mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I hear the same...
Lynn Samuelson.
The opposite side of what you talk about, I mean, from y'all, both sides, I mean, you talked about how the conservatives use inflaming remarks, or things like that. I mean, wasn't it Al Gore that was saying that Bush betrayed this country, betrayed... I mean, you heard that over and over and over.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't ever recall hearing Al Gore say that.
Oh, my gosh. You should listen to him. He has said he was in a big speech. He was sounding like he was like a Baptist preacher.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, Joe, I think that George Bush betrayed this country. He lied to us.
Okay, let me ask you. Let's be intellectually honest, then. Why is it on the liberal side y'all are wrong and Bush lied? I mean, I can. There are quotes from Pelosi. There's quotes from Kerry, Clinton, Kennedy. Every one of them saying that there are weapons there. Kerry even supported him to whatever it takes. He even said that.
And you know where they all got their information, Joe? They got it from George Bush. He lied to them, too.
But this information dates back from 1998.
No, sorry.
My gosh, it's the same information.
You know, this is part of the spin that you'll hear on Hannity's show. Back in 1998, I mean, if you haven't listened to the show long enough to hear, you know, to Scott Ritter, for example, he was in 1998. Ritter came back and he said, "Okay, we've got it. We've got everything except there's a half a dozen buildings here where we're pretty sure he's hiding something." And Bill Clinton blew those buildings up, and they were certain that they had virtually everything. For example,
isn't Pelosi on the House Intelligence Committee?
I don't know.
Well, Pelosi, I believe, she's on that. You mean to tell me that they're just taking their information what comes from the White House?
Yeah, they were.
Have access to other...
They actually were, and a lot of them are very pissed off about it right now. They're very upset that they were lied to, just like all the rest of America was lied to. They're very upset.
I don't think they were lied. I truly.
That's why they're saying things like this guy betrayed America.
Okay, you say even in 98, 99, 2000, all this information was out there. There's quotes of Clinton talking about it in 2000.
You obviously didn't listen to the hearings in detail about 9/11. No, there wasn't. There wasn't. The consensus after 98 was that we had wiped out his ability to threaten us. And in fact, if you know, just common sense dictates that.
The ability, then it was gone.
It was gone. Because particularly with nerve gas and the biological weapons, particularly the nerve agents, the precursor chemicals don't last that long. These agents, the chemicals that Don Rumsfeld went over and sold to him back in 87, those chemicals only last for 6 or 7 years, and then they're no good. You can't, you know, old nerve agent doesn't work. And, you know, we knew this. We knew this. We knew that this guy didn't represent a threat. And the rest of the world knew it, too. And that's why everybody at the UN was saying, wait, let's see if there's any proof. And Hans Blix came back and he said, you know, it's looking like there's no proof. And Saddam has handed us this 12,000 pages of documents, and we'd like to see the 9,000 pages that the Bush administration is hiding from us. And the Bush administration said, no, we're going to keep those. And Blix said, well, in fact, he said it, you'll recall, to Colin Powell. Colin Powell said, or Don Rumsfeld, rather. Don Rumsfeld said, we know where they're at. And Hans Blix went on TV and said, if he knows where they're at, tell me, and we will find them. And Rumsfeld said, well, yeah, I'm sorry, I can't tell you. And Blix went back in.
At that time, back in then, did we have inspectors in there at the time?
We did. We absolutely did.
In 2001, we had inspectors.
I'm talking about the run-up to the war in Iraq when the inspectors went back in. You know, it wasn't Saddam Hussein who kicked the inspectors out. That's another one of the great right-wing lies that you will hear all the time on right-wing talk radio. It was Bill Clinton who pulled the inspectors out so that he could bomb Iraq because he felt that Saddam was not complying with Scott Ritter and his inspection team fully. And we didn't send them back in.
Well, you know, the thing is I still believe that the information they got, I don't think it was necessarily malfunction or lies as you put it. I mean, you look at the stuff that was so intense on what Clinton was talking about, some of the quotes I was just reading a few nights ago that he was making in 2001, I mean in 2000, that this man was a very, very dangerous man. They always put things in very ambiguous terms, like he still has the potential. It didn't, you know...
You know, nobody is suggesting that Saddam Hussein wasn't a crazed madman. But before we commit $200 billion, I mean, you're talking $200 billion, the 200th largest city in the United States is like Lansing, Michigan. I mean, you're talking a city of 200,000 people. If we gave $1 billion to each one of our cities, we could have a renaissance in America. Before you commit $200 billion and the lives of 700 people. I mean, when we went into Bosnia, we did not lose one soldier in combat. When we went into Kosovo, we did not lose one soldier in combat.
Look, how did we do that?
We
dropped a bunch of bombs on.
We
sent in the troops. And even then, the problems in Kosovo, it's been a flop because there's still a lot of ethnic fighting is still going on there that they just don't talk about.
It's relatively stabilized. The reason why we didn't lose troops then was because we were following the Powell Doctrine. We went in with overwhelming force. And then the Powell Doctrine got set aside, much to the chagrin of Colin Powell, and the Rumsfeld Doctrine prevailed. Oh, we don't have to worry about the after the war. We don't need a lot of troops. We can do this on the cheap. You know, you had Wolfowitz testifying before Congress. The total cost of the thing is going to be $1.7 billion. Are these guys liars or are they deluded? Which is it, Joe?
Well, that's definitely a problem that I have. I have a lot of problems with the right side also. I still don't like a lot of the spending situation. I'm not a big fan of the recent Social Security, the drug program.
Yeah.
I'm very critical on that side.
Yeah, they're ripping
us
off.
The thing is that Joe look at things from the liberals like, you're never wrong. I mean, I still have not heard a liberal say anything that Clinton did wrong.
Oh, I'll tell you a lot of things that Clinton did wrong. I talk about it all the time. I am constantly criticizing Bill Clinton for signing the Telecommunications Act in 1996 and for 1997 pushing through NAFTA and GATT. I think those were disasters. Bill Clinton is in bed with the corporations in America. The Democratic Leadership Council is the worst thing that's ever happened to the Democratic Party, and they're out there all the time trying to turn the Democratic Party into Republicans light. And Bill Clinton is right at the head of the pack there. And I'll say it now. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Joe, we got to go. We got to take a break here.
Right.
Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour. It's Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Seabirds in Scotland lose their leftovers and have to make a switch in their diets. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of seabirds like to follow commercial fishing boats to eat the undersized fish that get dumped overboard. One of those birds is the great skua, a big brown seabird that breeds on islands in the North Sea off the coast of Scotland. But the great skua has fewer easy leftovers these days. That's because fishing restrictions have cut the number of fishing boats on the North Sea. A scientist in Scotland says it looks like the great skua is making up for lost fish by eating other birds. Stephen Vautier is an ecologist at the University of Glasgow, and he's published a paper on great skuas in the journal Nature. Vautier says great skuas have probably always eaten smaller birds to some degree, but he says small birds make up a growing proportion of the skua's diet since the decline in commercial fishing activity. Vautier says the skuas often kill puffins, fomars, and black-legged kittiwakes that also roost in colonies on the Scottish Isles.
They tend to wait for the birds to come back to the colonies. The skuas effectively are hanging around the colonies and looking for either chicks or for adult birds. They might be feeding on seabirds further out to sea. We don't know that because we couldn't very easily observe what was happening out at sea.
Vautier says the fishing restrictions in the North Sea are designed to restore populations of cod and herring.
We need to conserve our fish stocks not only for environmental reasons, but also from an economical point of view, as many people rely on fishing as an industry.
Vautier says rebuilding healthy populations of fish in the North Sea is essential to restoring some stability for commercial fishing and for birds like the great skua that like to eat fish as well. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's a beautiful day. Skyfall, you feel like it's a beautiful day. So let it get away.
It's a beautiful day here in the People's Republic of Vermont, where I'm broadcasting to you live from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone. The sun is out. Holy cow, it's 76 degrees. I think it's been, maybe it's the second time this year it's gotten above 70. It must be that spring is here. Anyhow, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. NATO balking at UN mission. At Iraq mission, excuse me. This is what I started to tell you about here before Joe called. Amid rising violence and public opposition to the occupation, allies wanted to delay a major commitment until after the U.S. election. The Western Military Alliance had expected this from the Los Angeles Times, Paul Richter, Times staff writer. The Western Military Alliance had expected to announce at a June summit that it would accept a role in the country, that being Iraq, perhaps by leading the international division now patrolling south-central Iraq. That's largely where the Brits are and the Poles and everybody else. But amid continuing bloodshed and strong public opposition to the occupation in many nations, allies wanted to delay any major commitment until after the U.S. presidential election in November, officials say. One NATO official says, any enthusiasm there has drained away. Compounding the allies' wariness, the article goes on, is the fact that some countries with troops already in Iraq are unhappy with the U.S. war strategy. And they point out that John Kerry called on President Bush this month to work harder on the necessary diplomacy to share the burden and make progress in Iraq. He said that NATO members must be treated with respect and said their involvement in other steps to internationalize the reconstruction could be the last chance to get it right. Amen. It ain't going to happen, though, from George Bush. It's just not going to happen. See, I think that what's going on here is that the folks at NATO are saying, if Bush gets reelected, we're out of here. We're not going to have anything to do with this thing. You guys, you know, just take your arrogant line of you know, I Claudius. We don't need the rest of the world. We don't need no stinking UN. We don't need no stinking inspectors. We're going to take the oil, thank you very much. We don't want to give Hans Blix even one more month. After all, as Dick Cheney said, you know, Iraq is sitting on 10% of the world's oil. That's very significant. And they're just going to say, see you guys later. And if John Kerry gets elected, then they may consider it. That's my prediction. Anyhow, it's many members take the view that Afghanistan is where NATO's credibility is on the line. They're having a—I mean, NATO is in Afghanistan. I think I don't know if most Americans realize this, but right now they say in Iraq it's the U.S.'s credibility that's on the line, and our credibility is shot, absolutely shot. You're listening to the Tom Hartman radio program, The True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly, and they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Talks continue between the Communication Workers of America and phone giant SBC. All 102,000 line maintenance, directory assistants, and other technical staff scattered throughout 13 states will stay on the job for the time being. The deadline to come to agreement on a new contract expired this weekend, but is being extended on a day-by-day basis, so long as talks between the two sides, with the assistance of federal mediation, remain active. The CWA says it'll also give 24 hours notice before taking any job action now. In related news, one of SBC's major competitors is cutting back on staff. MCI announced this week it'll lay off 7,500 people by the end of the year. That's 15% of the MCI workforce and an increase of 3,000 cuts over and above those previously planned for the year.
A regional office of the National Labor Relations Board dealt a blow to Wisconsin United Food and Commercial Workers Local 538 with a ruling that could end union representation at the Jefferson Tyson plant. Workers there were on strike for nearly a year, ending last January after they accepted a four-year contract that differed little from the one that originally caused their walkout. According to the NLRB ruling, all 300 replacement workers hired during the strike must be made permanent. Now, replacement workers are lobbying the NLRB to deauthorize the Tyson Union. Only the 300 replacement workers and about 200 called-back strikers will be allowed to vote. Therefore, union members will be outnumbered, and if Tyson wins, they most likely won't have to rehire union members or give them back pay.
A jobs boom may be just around the corner in Canada, but only for tattoo artists behind bars. It's related to a pilot program starting this year by the Correctional Service of Canada. It's going to put tattoo parlors in prisons around the country. The ultimate goal is to cut the hepatitis C epidemic in the prison system, which is blamed in large part on homemade ink jobs done by untrained cellmates. Six prisons in all will get tattoo parlors this year. Inmates will be trained to run them, but the government will hold censorship control over designs that glorify violence or gangs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most recent census identified nearly 44 million Americans without health insurance, but that's only half the story. A report released this month from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation says nearly half of them, almost 20 million in all, have jobs but no benefits. This dispels the myth that uninsured must also mean unemployed. In 37 states and the District of Columbia, one in every 10 working adults has no health benefits. But the problem is worst in Texas, where one in four are uninsured.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Wonderful news, folks! The latest economic miracle has been found. Can you say nanotechnology? Better than high-tech, we're told. Even better than biotech. Nanotech is the golden fleece, the next big thing. It involves lab technicians manipulating microscopic molecules to manufacture synthetic nanoparticles that can be used in computers, lubricants, and other products. These man-made substances are all the rage in economic development circles, with both federal and state governments pushing taxpayer money at this fledgling industry. Politicos in my state of Texas, for example, are all a-Twitter about getting a big piece of the nano action, planning to throw scarce public funds at corporations in order to lure them to choose Texas as a nano center. But if they choose us, what do we get? A boom, they promise. But remember the 90s, when they promised that high-tech would make everyone rich? Those companies were not profitable, however. The boom went bust, and the best high-tech jobs are now being sent offshore. So here we go again. Capital is madly rushing to nanotech, but the companies are not profitable, and no one is actually promising good jobs for Americans. Then there's a little hiccup that neither the politicos nor the industry want to talk about. These tiny nanoparticles are big-time toxic. A stunning new study of fish finds that the synthetic molecules cause severe brain and liver damage in the largemouth bass that were tested, and they wipe out whole populations of small organisms in water that are a crucial part of the aquatic food chain. Other studies have found that nanoparticles cause lung damage when inhaled, raising serious health issues for workers in nanotech factories. This is Jim Hightower saying, this time, before our leaders sink tons of our tax dollars in yet another high-tech, get-rich-quick scam, shouldn't they ask a few pertinent questions about the price we'll pay for this so-called progress?
Toyota owners, tired of paying high gas prices? Well, how about paying nothing? That's right. Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Plus, 1,000 more will win $50 fill-ups. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer to enter the sweepstakes. You'll get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and ask about our May tire and service offers.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void or prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 7 minutes past the hour, the second hour of our program today, Wednesday the 12th of May, day 967 in the search for Osama bin Laden, 937 days since the anthrax killer single-handedly assured the passage of the Patriot Act by putting out a commission. Pat Leahy, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee that was holding the act and not going to release it, and Tom Daschle, who was opposing it. Day 352 in the search for weapons of mass distraction. And 299 days since Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame, was outed. And the White House and George Bush said, well, you know, this is a big administration. There's a lot of senior officials. I don't know if we're going to find this guy. And yeah, I don't know either. Anyhow, we have today, I'm very pleased to have back on the program, Chuck Morse. Chuck is a friend of mine. Chuck is an author. He's a talk show host. He's a notorious right-winger, and he's running for Congress against Barney Frank in Massachusetts. Chuck, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Oh, it's always great to have you here. I hope you don't mind being called a notorious right-winger.
Well, I'll go with the part about notorious.
Okay. But you do call yourself a conservative.
Yes.
Yeah, and you wrote this piece on the We Can Pay for the War in Iraq, and the question that I have here is, why do conservatives, and we can talk about a lot of other things too, but this is the one that's kind of burning in my mind. In your article, you say, President John F. Kennedy understood that tax cuts stimulate the economy when he enacted one of the largest tax cuts in the post-war period. Kennedy understood that tax cuts lead to an increase in capital accumulation and economic activity. And I'm wondering, why do conservatives insist on misrepresenting JFK to justify essentially insane economic policies that are wiping out America's middle class?
Well, I don't think there's a misrepresentation there. I think President Kennedy was relying on hidebound and well-established economic axioms, which is that the more money that is left in the hands of those who create income and capital, the more economic stimulation you have. I mean, the reason this country has the highest rate of living in the world is because we do honor the tradition of private ownership and private enterprise and the accumulation of capital to the degree that we do.
Well, I would say,
go to more authoritarian countries, whether they be left or right, you have government ownership of capital, you have government ownership of industry, and you have great and horrible poverty.
Well, first of all, I would say we don't have the highest standard of living in the world. Actually, Norway has the highest standard of living in the world. Sweden is second. We're about number 17 on that list. And none of those countries,
50 states to a tiny country like Norway, it's just out of proportion.
But well, I mean, you made the statement, so I'm just, you know.
Yeah, well, and I'm just putting in that rejoinder. It's a silly comparison.
Okay. And secondly, you actually think that John Kennedy cut taxes, huh?
He apparently did. In 1962, Kennedy cut taxes, one of the largest tax cuts in the post-war period, and it led to the prosperity of the 1960s. In 1980 or 81, the Reagan tax cut, I would contend, led to the prosperity of the 80s. And even in 1994, President Clinton held the line on taxes as well, and I think that helped the economy. I think that it's a proven axiom, once again, that the more capital, and it's a moral issue besides a practical issue, the more capital you leave in the hands of those who create capital, the more the economy is stimulated, and the more activity and exchange you've got.
Okay, well, let's examine that. First of all, with regard to Reagan, I'm sure you're aware of the fact that Reagan passed a huge tax cut that
right.
threw the country into deficits that we're still paying over $100 billion a year in interest on today,
well,
out of our tax dollars.
I think that the deficit was not because of the tax cut. The deficit was because we increased spending. Now, obviously, in my contention is that tax cuts have to be accompanied by a cut in spending.
And then, well, to finish my sentence, and then for the following 6 years, every single year, Reagan raised taxes.
Well, that if that be true, then Reagan was not the true conservative we thought he was.
It is true.
The point
true.
Is that Reagan did raise the deficit because Reagan increased spending, mainly in...
Mainly for Star Wars, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Star Wars and an increase in a refurbishing of the military, which I think was necessary, but nevertheless, it did create a bigger deficit.
Okay, well, let's go back to Jack Kennedy here. On May 25th, 1961, before the joint session of Congress, Kennedy laid this out. He said, "I'm submitting today to provide full pay-as-you-go financing and to close those tax loopholes earlier specified. Our security and progress cannot be cheaply purchased, and their price must be found in what we all forego as well as what we all must pay." He was submitting a tax increase. He was reducing the top marginal rate from 90% down to 70%. It had been established at 90% under Roosevelt. It had been down around 25%. Actually, Herbert Hoover was the president who presided over the second largest tax cut in history, now second to George W. Bush. Herbert Hoover had a series, if you take an entire administration and aggregate it, Herbert Hoover had a huge series of massive tax cuts in the late 20s, which led to the Great Depression. And Roosevelt raised it up to 90%. Kennedy came in and he said, you know, most people in the 90% bracket aren't actually paying 90%. And in fact, here's from his May 9th, 1962 news conference at the State Department. He says, good afternoon. I have one announcement, a statement. Because mail received at the White House and by members of the Senate indicates that a great number of people have been badly misinformed concerning one feature of the pending tax bill, I want to take this opportunity to set the record straight on our proposal to collect taxes. He said, this bill simply proposes to collect taxes on dividends and interest income in the same fashion that it has been collected on our wages and salaries for the past 19 years. Now, that's the opposite of what George Bush has done. George Bush has set it up so if you make your living sitting by the pool waiting for your dividend check to arrive, you only pay 15% tax and you pay nothing in payroll taxes. Whereas if you make your living out there working, you pay, you know, up to 32, 33% tax plus you pay payroll taxes. Anyhow, Kennedy goes on, those whose income is too low will not be subject to tax will not be affected, for they can exempt themselves from withholding by a simple statement. The only ones affected will be those individuals who are not now paying the taxes they owe on this type of income. This is tax evasion. Tax evasion of $800 million a year, which if you prorate would be like $800 billion in today's dollars, which must be made up by other taxpayers who pay their taxes. And it should be remembered that about 80% of dividend income goes to fewer than 7% of the taxpayers. And this country has prided itself on being willing to bear its heavy burdens honestly. And here is millions of dollars in taxes which have been on the books for years, which are not being paid, and which must be paid by every other taxpayer, particularly those who find their wages withheld on salaries and wages. And he said, and he goes on to talk about how people, the Republicans are distorting his position. And he says, those who wish to defeat it by misinforming so many millions of people, I hope they will start to send out the correct record. And in fact,
well, while I'm in favor of lower taxes, at the same time, I am in favor of taxing income. And if dividend income is income that has not already been taxed, then the income should be taxed like any other income.
So you disagree with George Bush
regarding the cashing in of bonds on Wall Street, bonds purchased through the bond market, is that is income that was already taxed once. So I think that it's really a matter of double jeopardy. I would say the same thing with Social Security annuity as well.
Well, hang on just a second here.
Going in, and I don't think it should be taxed twice. It doesn't seem appropriate.
Okay, so if a corporation pays income taxes and then they pay me a salary, that corporation has already paid taxes, and then they're using the money they got left over to pay me a salary. So that money has already been taxed once. How is that any different than if that corporation has money left over and then they pay me a dividend?
Well, that's fine, but the point is that if the money was taxed going in...
It hasn't been taxed to me.
Well, then
dividend income has not been taxed
to me. I mean,
the cons talk about double taxation. It's a lie.
Well, the point is that when you buy a dividend, when you buy a bond, when you buy stock, when you buy any sort of an instrument of investment, it's money that is taxed when at the point of earning, and you've already paid the tax on it. So when you sell it, you shouldn't have to pay tax on the principal. Now, you might have to pay tax on the interest if it's interest income.
Chuck, Chuck, you and I are both small businessmen. We've both started businesses. If I take after-tax money, I've always done with every business I've started, you take some money that you've got, that you earned income on, you start a business, that business makes money and returns money to you. You take, in the form of salary or dividends or whatever. Yeah, are you saying that you should be exempt from taxes because you started that business with your own money?
No, you should have to pay tax on the money that you...
Then how is that different than buying stock in AT&T?
Well, if you realize it in income and there's been a profit on a principal that you paid in and had been taxed, then you pay taxes on that income. I mean, I think that also with Kennedy, he recognized in his speech in 1963 that to leave another principle that I mentioned in my article is that to leave money where it rightfully belongs at the source of production with people who have created it, you're actually, the government increases its revenues and should, because when you have more economic stimulation and activity.
But that's not what's happened.
That's not what's happened.
The government.
That's what happened.
No, it's not. When Ronald Reagan cut taxes, we went into deficit spending. When Herbert Hoover cut taxes, we went into deficit spending and we went into the Great Depression. When George Bush cut taxes, we went into deficit spending. And when Jack Kennedy increased taxes, the government got more revenue. When Franklin Roosevelt increased taxes, we got more revenue.
You're talking about apples and oranges. Both things happened. If you have more income in the private hands, you're going to have an increase in revenues to the government. But what also happened, in the case of Reagan, certainly, was that the government expanded and did so beyond the means of which it was.
Right, and I would say that any economic expansion in the 1980s, and you can track this back, Chuck, very carefully, very easily, any economic expansion was the result of Reagan spending trillions of dollars, I mean, it was literally hundreds of billions of dollars on the credit card of you and me. You know, the 20 years down the road, we're now paying this thing off on our credit card to produce a feel-good time, you know, a feel-good bubble.
That's an interesting argument, Tom, and I think it's something that it's worth examining.
I can back it up. It's well documented.
My understanding is that the income increased or the revenue increased because there was more capital at the source of creation. Governments cannot create income. They can't create jobs. A government can
not true, Chuck.
Income that's already been created.
No. The government can create jobs. In fact, there's hundreds of thousands of people. You know, about one-third of the total workforce of America works for the government. Those jobs don't exist.
It's a huge and overstuffed situation. But nevertheless, the income that they are paid is income that came out of the pockets of the taxpayer. The taxpayer created the money. The government then extracts the money from the taxpayer either through direct taxation or through what's called monetizing of a debt with the Federal Reserve.
And if those people are doing something that we want done, if the government, for example,
right,
is providing us with a police department, how is that any different than AT&T providing you with telephone service?
Because it's coercive. But putting that aside,
it's not coercive, Chuck, if we all agree to it.
Well, that's right. And one of the reasons I'm running for office is because as a representative of the taxpayer, I'm trying to let people know that we have to make sure that the government that is taken out of our income and taxes is being used efficiently and correctly.
You mean we're not giving billions to Halliburton?
What is it? Halliburton's a private company. What does that have to do with it?
Well, they're taking our tax dollars. You're talking about dollars that are taken coercively as taxes.
The government is hiring Halliburton.
One-third of that $87 billion went to private corporations. One-third of it.
If the government is hiring Halliburton to do something, then as a congressman who represents the taxpayer, I would have to do a serious look at where that money is going and what they're doing for it and make it as a public disclosure.
Well, that's great. I appreciate that. Chuck, hang on. We've got to take a break here. We're talking with Chuck Morse. ChuckMorse.com is his website. He's running for Congress against Bernie Frank, author, talk show host. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to jump into the fray.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A new study in the Journal of Urban Economics found that city dwellers living close to a National Football League franchise pay higher rent and property taxes for that privilege. On average, a resident in an NFL city pays $184 a year, or 8% more than those without a football team. And researchers found total property taxes were about $50 million a year higher.
During the past 3 years, it's true George W. Bush has created more jobs. Unfortunately, they were created in places like China. Bush's policies have encouraged the loss of nearly 3 million jobs. He supported tax breaks to corporations that ship jobs overseas. George W. Bush is taking our country in the wrong direction. It's time to make America work for every American.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the TuneTracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the TuneTracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original TuneTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Chuck Morse. ChuckMorse.com. ChuckMorse.com is his website. Chuck is the Republican candidate for the United States Congress, going up against Barney Frank in Massachusetts. Some would say a... Is it pronounced chaotic or quixotic? It's quixotic, isn't it?
I actually am running as an independent.
Oh, you are? Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
I'm not sure. I wouldn't describe my campaign as that. There's a lot of support for me out there.
I'm sure there is. And
a lot of grassroots support. I mean, I will tell you this. It's definitely somewhat of a insurgency type campaign. You know, I'm going after a hugely entrenched and powerful and well-heeled incumbent, somebody who doesn't. Is known to be pretty unscrupulous and doesn't take opposition well. But there's a lot of support for me out there, including people who generally think they like Barney Frank because they think, oh, they find him humorous. And,
yeah. You know, we saw this
but yet who know nothing about his very destructive record.
We saw this in Pennsylvania, too, where genuine conservatives or people who like yourself, who really consider themselves solid conservatives as opposed to rhino, Republican and name only types, they didn't, what was it, Rick?
I know who you mean, Toomey.
Toomey. He almost pulled it off, but maybe you'll do it. 26 minutes past the hour, Dave in Eureka, California is on the line. Hey, Dave, you're on the air with Tom and Chuck.
Good morning, gentlemen. Chuck,
hi, Dave.
I'd love to ask you a dozen questions. Time is precious. Two quick ones, if I might. One, do you feel that this marriage that we have today between special interests, corporate interests, and government represents any danger to the middle class, to the normal citizen, to the working poor? Do you feel that represents any threat?
Yes, I do.
Second question, I'd wonder if you were, in fact, in Congress, do you think that you would be concerned about the plight of, say, a person who works 50, 60 hours a week but can't afford health insurance, can barely support his family, can't afford to buy a house? Is that somebody that you would find you in government would have any concern about.
Yes, I would, and my solution to the problem might be a bit different than yours, but yes.
What would your solution be, Chuck? What do you do?
I would want to have trade policies that favor American business. I would want to have a pro-business record, which helps businesses locate in my district and start to create jobs. You know, businesses and private entities create jobs, and I want to have a pro-business atmosphere so that people can make some money. I also want to have low taxes so people could keep some of the money they make.
What do you do, though, when wages just keep going lower and lower and lower, like they are in the United States right now, as a result of the exact philosophy that you're espousing?
No, it's as a result of poor trade policies and also immigration that's not sustainable to the economy. Labor is a commodity like anything else, and if you have too much of it, the cost of labor goes down. I want to make sure that we have an immigration policy that is consummate with the level of economic production.
So you think we shouldn't be offshoring businesses?
Excuse me?
You think we shouldn't be allowing corporations to offshore jobs?
Yes, I think when a corporation applies for a charter in a state, that state, which represents the people of that state, have a right to put language into that charter that makes the corporation, gives certain obligations. People,
Chuck, you're a liberal!
Right.
I didn't realize it.
Both liberals and conservatives have forgotten the fact that a corporate charter is not a right. It's a privilege that is granted by the government. And if a corporate charter is granted in the state, then that corporation ought to guarantee certain things like jobs and like environment. And by the way, as an independent, I am a conservative in every sense, but I also, people are uncomfortable sometimes with some very liberal positions I take, particularly in areas of the environment and other areas.
Yeah. Well, good on you. I'm impressed, Chuck. Hey, are you going to the Talkers thing next week, by the way?
No.
Okay. We got to take a break here. It's 29 minutes past the hour. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Chuck Morse. We're going to hear from John Kennedy. And I want to ask, what's up with the Senate vote? Two Senate votes we had yesterday. Get Chuck's thoughts on this. ChuckMorse.com is his website. And we'll be right back. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stay tuned.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Talks continue between the Communication Workers of America and phone giant SBC. All 102,000 line maintenance, directory assistants, and other technical staff scattered throughout 13 states will stay on the job for the time being. The deadline to come to agreement on a new contract expired this weekend, but is being extended on a day-by-day basis, so long as talks between the two sides, with the assistance of federal mediation, remain active. The CWA says it'll also give 24 hours notice before taking any job action now. In related news, one of SBC's major competitors is cutting back on staff. MCI announced this week it'll lay off 7,500 people by the end of the year. That's 15% of the MCI workforce and an increase of 3,000 cuts over and above those previously planned for the year.
A regional office of the National Labor Relations Board dealt a blow to Wisconsin United Food and Commercial Workers Local 538 with a ruling that could end union representation at the Jefferson Tyson plant. Workers there were on strike for nearly a year, ending last January after they accepted a four-year contract that differed little from the one that originally caused their walkout. According to the NLRB ruling, all 300 replacement workers hired during the strike must be made permanent. Now, replacement workers are lobbying the NLRB to deauthorize the Tyson Union. Only the 300 replacement workers and about 200 called-back strikers will be allowed to vote.
Therefore, union members will be outnumbered, and if Tyson wins, they most likely won't have to rehire union members or give them back pay.
A jobs boom may be just around the corner in Canada, but only for tattoo artists behind bars. It's related to a pilot program starting this year by the Correctional Service of Canada. It's going to put tattoo parlors in prisons around the country. The ultimate goal is to cut the hepatitis C epidemic in the prison system, which is blamed in large part on homemade ink jobs done by untrained cellmates. Six prisons in all will get tattoo parlors this year. Inmates will be trained to run them, but the government will hold censorship control over designs that glorify violence or gangs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most recent census identified nearly 44 million Americans without health insurance, but that's only half the story. A report released this month from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation says nearly half of them, almost 20 million in all, have jobs but no benefits. This dispels the myth that uninsured must also mean unemployed. In 37 states and the District of Columbia, one in every 10 working adults has no health benefits. But the problem is worst in Texas, where one in four are uninsured.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. If you'd like to call in and have your voice heard, 1-866-889-8894. We're talking with Chuck Morse. Chuck, I consider you in the category of the cheap labor conservatives. That is, that you don't think that the minimum wage laws, for example, are a good idea. Unemployment was 23% when FDR took office in 1933. It dropped to 2.5% by the time the next Republican came into the White House in 1953, Eisenhower. It climbed back up to 6.5% by the end of that Republican administration. It dropped to 3.5% by the time LBJ left office. It climbed sharply to 5% under Nixon and stayed there for 27 years until Clinton brought it down to 4.5% early in his second term, and now it's back up above 5% again. Going all the way back to the 1920s, what we find is that unemployment goes up with Republicans and down with Democrats. How do you handle that?
Speaking of which, I thought your comments about the tax cuts under Hoover were very interesting, and I'm wondering, did those tax cuts happen before the stock market crash or after?
Before. Before, really? Yeah, over a three-year period, before the stock market crash. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, I have to study it. I don't know why. He must have had a reason. I mean, there was probably some sort of a forewarning that there was trouble. I think there was a reason why, for example.
No, he was responding to pressure from wealthy campaign donors. That was the bottom line. He was doing the same thing George Bush is. Now, looking at from 1957 to 1969, you know, here's, we had an increase. We created the minimum wage in 1938, and we've raised it three times since then, 1957, 1963, and 1996. So let's take a look at that. In 57, we raised the minimum wage. It went up to, I don't remember the number, but it would have made almost a livable wage. It would be the equivalent of about $12 an hour right now at 1957. And let's look at inflation then, because the conservative argument is if you raise the minimum wage, you get inflation. In 57, inflation was at 3.38%. We raised the minimum wage that year. In the next year, 58, it went down to 2.98%. 59, it went down to 0.5%. 1960, 1.72. 61, 1.13. 63, 1.10. 64, 1.37. 65, 1.62. Then it started creeping back up again. 66, 2.92. 2.82 in 67. 4.26 in 68. 5.29 in 69. This was, of course, because LBJ had gone into deficit spending for the Vietnam War. So then we get, another increase. Another increase in the minimum wage. Well, the second one was in 63, and that caused inflation to go down. And then in 96, we had an increase in the minimum wage. And again, we saw inflation go down. In 96, it was 2.96. In 97, 2.35. 98, 1.51. 91, 2.21. How do you square that? I mean, it seems like the statistics indicate that increasing the minimum wage actually decreases inflation.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure how to square that, but I'll tell you this. It seems to me, at least today, that usually it's people on the higher end of the economic spectrum, certainly in my district, who are the ones who are the most in favor of most against tax cuts. And I'm not sure if that was the case during Hoover's time, but usually the richest types, people like the Kennedys and them, they're the ones who are big advocates of tax increases. I mean, my opponent is constantly voting for tax increases, and he's done a series of interviews over the years, usually with left-wing magazines, where he actually boasts and extols the great and glorious fight keeping the taxes high and keeping fighting against tax cuts from those dastardly right-wingers. And it seems to me that it is a class matter in that usually the richer people are the ones who seem to like the tax increases.
But isn't the bottom line, Chuck, that we really should just be paying as we go? I mean, isn't the bottom line that if we're going to have, you know, here's George Bush. He's not even saying how much he's going to, he's not even telling us how much the war is going to cost. I mean, there were the appropriations for this fiscal year, which ends in October, are falling short by $25 billion for this year, and there's nothing for next year.
A lot more than we thought it was going to cost. I'll grant you that. But, you know, look at it. I mean, I think that this, I mean, if you want to talk about the war, I think it's a matter of either we get behind it or we're going to lose it, which is going to be bad for the future of our country, not to mention the world.
Yeah,
and it's one of those things. I mean, World War II wasn't cheap either.
Well, you know, can you think of a time when we went into a country to liberate them from themselves successfully?
You know, I was thinking about this, Tom, from our last interview, and we talked about the war. It was more of an emphasis on that subject. And I was thinking that after the interview, sometimes when you recap what went down, that there is a view, and I'm not saying it's necessarily from you, but it's from a lot of people on the left, a lot of your callers. It's a profoundly negative view of the United States, in that you don't see the possibility or even open into the possibility that we are in Iraq because we want to help people liberate themselves from a miserable regime. We have to be there because we're occupying.
But, Chuck, that's not what George Bush said.
And it comes from a sinister view of this country. Now, I don't think we are there. I mean, technically, sure, we are occupying in that we have troop number A and B.
Hang on just a second,
country,
Chuck.
Just
Chuck,
like
Chuck.
We have in Europe.
Chuck,
but
wait.
We're not there in the same connotation of trying to gain something and trying to do something.
Chuck,
sinister.
Here is why we are there. Very straightforward.
Facing clear evidence of peril, we cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
That's why we're there, because George
exactly.
Bush lied to us.
That's a very big part of it. And
I got his entire speech here. I've got, you know, 20, 30 clips from it, and not one of them talks about let's free the Iraqi people.
Well,
not
that's
once.
That's all a part of it. It's both. I mean, it's a, you know, if
well, it is now.
Good, if we could do something good in the process, like free 23 million people from oppression, sure. But yes, I mean, part of it is the threat of nuclear, biological, and chemical war, whether or not it actually pans out to be the case, and I think that increasing evidence indicates that it was, is beside the point.
It was?
Is that the entire world believed that this, including all the Democrats and including President Clinton, believed that this was the case.
Actually, Chuck,
and it was
no.
An appropriate move to stop it. The, you know, there were, maybe there were some intelligence mistakes that go back, in a sense, to the early days of the Clinton administration. But nevertheless, it was done. There's nothing.
You're spinning this, Chuck.
Conspiracy here.
You're
knew secretly that there wasn't.
Chuck, you're spinning this. I can't believe it. I mean, the rest of the world was saying, "No, wait a minute. We don't. We want to find out if there are weapons of mass destruction there."
The rest of the world was saying that they. Now everybody believed there was. They just weren't sure they had. There was a moral strength to go in and do it, but part of that also is financial incentives from countries like France and Germany who are doing business with Saddam Hussein and the UN, which was apparently making...
They were all on record with their votes to the United Nations that if you can prove to us that there's weapons of mass destruction, we will go in and kick this guy's butt. Everybody, the rest of the world. I mean, that was Resolution 1440.
They did recognize that there were, or believed that they were. It had more to do with the fact that they thought, well, let's just wait a little longer and see if we can have sanctions work. And
no,
you know, it was kind of a
let's find out.
And I think that had a lot to do with financial interests between Saddam Hussein and not only the UN, but with France and Germany.
And you don't think that all that oil that France and Germany were lusting over is why we're there, that we were lusting over
it? No, I don't. I don't think we're trying to get oil. I don't believe there's no evidence of it. We're trying to return the oil to the Iraqi people. If you have evidence that somehow the Americans are trying to, you know, this conspiracy theory that we're trying to...
Well, here's the first evidence. We canceled the contracts that the Iraqi government had with China, France, Germany, Russia, and South Korea, and gave those contracts to American companies.
Fine. I mean, the contracts were now...
What more evidence do you need?
A potential government that represents people... And oil companies instead of Saddam Hussein, who had a monopoly control of the entire oil industry and was using the money to further his own ends.
Okay,
so I think that now there's a possibility that the revenue extracted from oil in Iraq is going to go toward benefiting the people at large rather than a clique of bath socialists.
But then why is it that the Bush administration is keeping it a secret? It's considered classified information. How much they are the country of Iraq is selling that oil to Halliburton for?
I have no idea, but I don't see.
Well, you want your evidence? I think that's it. We got Doug from Santa Fe on the line. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Hey, Doug, welcome to the show.
Hello, I got a question for the guest. If you're elected to the Senate, which I believe is the
House of Representatives,
I want to know how hard you yourself personally are going to push to end this reliance that we have as Americans on oil.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I believe in, and I'll make no bones about it. I believe in developing oil resources on the North Slope of Alaska. I also believe
You believe in developing oil resources in Alaska?
That's what's correct. But I also believe
I want to know what you want to do to get us out of this oil requirement that we have here in the United States. It's causing wars. It's causing all kinds of havoc around the world because we are so reliant on oil. What are you going to do?
Something that I think is very true, because the minute we develop alternative energy and we loosen our reluctance on oil, will be the minute that the entire Islamic enterprise goes down the tubes. And I agree with you. I think those are investments that should be made. At the same time, I think that our nation should become more energy self-reliant by developing some of the resources that we are sitting on.
Chuck, you know, all of the oil in Alaska is going to do nothing. I mean, it's a six-month supply.
I heard a speech by the lieutenant governor of Alaska who pointed out that the resources up there are huge.
Yeah, they are. It's billions of dollars. It's billions of dollars.
Entire lakes of oil.
Yeah, it's billions of dollars. It'll be a lot of money for the people of Alaska, but it's still
a
six-month...
It's years.
It's a six-month supply.
I've heard otherwise.
Well,
I mean, we may be getting our information differently, but
yeah.
Understanding is that it is a huge resource that's untapped.
Doug, thanks
for
the call.
It can be done with very minimal damage to the ecology.
You're right. 1-866-889-8894. Jim in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. You know, I have to say, your guest, I really value somebody who can, you know, think and speak logically and clearly and bring a logical sentence together and so on, especially in these days. But, you know, when it comes down to it, and somebody who claims to be an independent, but when it comes right down to it, your guest is really seems to be willing to go along with almost any administration line, including the big one about why we went into Iraq, although it was never stated, and whatever the next reason is going to be, and so on and so on. So I'm disappointed because I've heard this guy before. I've kind of on your show. I've kind of admired him, but I think it comes down to just some of the same old ideology. And Bush must be right because for some unknown mystical reason, these guys must know what they're doing. Kind of logic.
Yeah, thank you, Jim.
I believe in the war against terror for my own reasons. It has nothing to do with Bush or Clinton. It's something that I wrote a book on the topic that's posted on my website. My ideas on it are very much derived from my own research, and they really are separate from what anyone else is doing. I happen to agree in general with the administration's approach.
On most things,
it's Bush. If it was Clinton, I agreed with President Clinton's declaration in 1998 that there had to be a regime change in Iraq as well, and I was outspoken about that. So it's not actually something that has to do with partisan politics, and I am an independent on the
Chuck, here are two votes that were passed in the Senate yesterday. The Senate, and I just like to get your response to these, and then I got a short 1 minute of JFK I want to play for you. The Senate, by a single vote, rejected an effort Tuesday to extend federal unemployment benefits. The amendment would have offered emergency federal unemployment benefits for 6 months, temporarily giving 13 weeks of extra assistance to people who exhaust their state benefits. That was one thing. They said no to unemployed people. And then an hour later, the Senate passed a $170 billion package of corporate tax cuts Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong? Have we gone nuts?
Those so-called corporate tax cuts might end up stimulating the economy by letting corporations invest in whatever they're investing in, which will create jobs.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, look, we're either going to be in the business of creating jobs by leaving capital in the hands.
So we're
going to
create jobs by going further and further in debt.
Well, that's another subject. We're talking about the
margins. I just for the record, just because you've been quoting Kennedy here in this article that you wrote, I just want you to hear Jack Kennedy in his own words talk about how upset he was about how the Republicans were arguing that he was trying to reduce taxes when in fact his plan was to close tax loopholes. And well, I'll just let him say it in his own words here, Chuck.
Yes, I have stated in both debates and state again that I believe in a balanced budget and have supported that concept during my 14 years in the Congress. The only two times when an unbalanced budget is warranted would be during a serious recession, and we had that in 58 in an unbalanced budget of $12 billion, or a national emergency where there should be large expenditures for national defense, which we had in World War II and during part of the Korean War.
And then he continues to say,
third, I think it's possible to gain $700 million to $1 billion through tax changes, which I believe would close up loopholes on dividend withholding, on expense accounts.
He said gain revenue. Mm-hmm.
So in my judgment, we would spend more money in this administration on aid to education. We'd spend more money on housing. We'd spend more money, and I hope more wisely, on defense than this administration has done. But I believe that the next administration should work for a balanced budget, and that would be my intention. Mr. Nixon misstates my figures constantly, which is, of course, his right. But the fact of the matter is, here is where I stand, and I just want to have it on the public record.
Amen.
He said, Tom, he said that during the debates before he was elected.
Yeah, well,
he had a tax cut.
No, actually, I read to you from the 1962... May 9th, 1962, good afternoon. Well, I already read it, you know, where he says, I want to set the record straight. These people are distorting what I said. And, he did exactly what he said, Chuck. Go back and check the record. You'll see.
Well, he also did have the tax cut.
He reduced the top marginal rate. He reduced the top marginal rate, and he increased the amount of actual tax collection by the federal government. By closing loopholes.
Close it, fine, but that's not a tax increase. What he did was increase the actual
loophole
collection by reducing taxes.
No, the loophole that he closed was that people were not paying taxes on dividends.
Fine, if that's taxable income, they should pay taxes.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot. Stick around, Chuck. We're talking to Chuck Morris. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Making companies more responsible for the products they make can cut down on what goes into the garbage can. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Over the past 50 years, single-use products have become a driving force in industrial economies. The environmental costs of our throwaway society are enormous. Michael Renner is a researcher with the World Watch Institute. He says new policies in Europe aim to cut down on wasteful consumption. Companies must comply with extended producer responsibility laws.
What extended producer responsibility means is companies are no longer permitted to produce a product, sell it, and then basically never have to worry about that product and the materials that are embedded in the product again. These extended producer responsibility laws state that companies have to be responsible for their product the entire way. Once the product comes to the end of its useful life, the company is actually expected to take that product back and then to see whether the product can be taken apart so that maybe the materials can be salvaged, the various parts can be reused.
Renner says these take-back laws encourage companies to produce goods that can be recycled or reused. He says another practice, called cradle-to-cradle, encourages manufacturers to work together to cut waste.
But another idea that's embedded in cradle to cradle is to see whether the byproducts of a given factory, instead of becoming part of the waste flow, whether they might actually be something that is usable in another factory, hopefully one that is actually located physically very close by.
Renner says making industry more responsible for its products is an effective way to put an end to our throwaway consumption habits. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 24 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. CEOs still riding the gravy train. In 2003, most CEOs continue to reap healthy rewards. 7 of the 17 largest CEOs in the Chicago area, this from the Chicago Sun-Times, received double-digit pay increases. Chuck, the CEO of Abbott Laboratories, Miles White, made $5.53 million this year. The CEO of Allstate Insurance, Yeah, the CEO of Allstate Insurance, Edward Libby, made $7.1 million. Miles White, his $5.5 million. That's why our drug prices are so high. Edward Libby, his $7.1 million. Our insurance company our prices are so high. ADM, Alan Andreas, he made $2.3 million. That's why, you know, our family farms are being wrecked. I mean, you know, what's going on here? How can you conservatives continue to defend the rape and pillage and plunder of America's wealth and in particular the destruction of our middle class by these corporate feudalists, these new feudal lords?
Well, first of all, it may not sound popular to say this because it doesn't exploit class envy and general envy, but it's really none of our business how much a private CEO of a company makes on the face of it. What is our business, however, is if these private companies or groups of companies such as the drug industry or the insurance industry have lobbyists on Capitol Hill, basically getting special laws passed to protect them, which is not capitalism, but which is, in a sense, a kind of a fascistic tendency. Now, I support, for example, the importation of drugs. I see no reason why people can't buy drugs anywhere in the world. I don't think that they should have the right to have.
But that's just going to hurt local pharmacies. I mean, why not just say, listen, we're going to go to a single payer health system.
It's going to penalize the price because the drug companies, if they have to compete, won't be able to do so if people can get the same drug at a lesser price. You know, the answer is a free market answer. Make them compete on the open market without getting the special laws passed that protect their little industries.
Yeah, but the reality is that they're getting all these special laws passed, and there's just, you know, it's very little we can do to stop it. Chuck Morse, thanks for being with us. ChuckMorse.com is website, and Chuck is running for Congress against Barney Frank there. Good luck, Chuck. Thanks for being with us. Thanks.
All right.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Talks continue between the Communication Workers of America and phone giant SBC. All 102,000 line maintenance, directory assistants, and other technical staff scattered throughout 13 states will stay on the job for the time being. The deadline to come to agreement on a new contract expired this weekend, but is being extended on a day-by-day basis, so long as talks between the two sides, with the assistance of federal mediation, remain active. The CWA says it'll also give 24 hours notice before taking any job action now. In related news, one of SBC's major competitors is cutting back on staff. MCI announced this week it'll lay off 7,500 people by the end of the year. That's 15% of the MCI workforce and an increase of 3,000 cuts over and above those previously planned for the year.
A regional office of the National Labor Relations Board dealt a blow to Wisconsin United Food and Commercial Workers Local 538 with a ruling that could end union representation at the Jefferson Tyson plant. Workers there were on strike for nearly a year, ending last January after they accepted a 4-year contract that differed little from the one that originally caused their walkout. According to the NLRB ruling, all 300 replacement workers hired during the strike must be made permanent. Now, replacement workers are lobbying the NLRB to deauthorize the Tyson Union. Only the 300 replacement workers and about 200 called-back strikers will be allowed to vote. Therefore, union members will be outnumbered, and if Tyson wins, they most likely won't have to rehire union members or give them back pay.
A jobs boom may be just around the corner in Canada, but only for tattoo artists behind bars. It's related to a pilot program starting this year by the Correctional Service of Canada. It's going to put tattoo parlors in prisons around the country. The ultimate goal is to cut the hepatitis C epidemic in the prison system, which is blamed in large part on homemade ink jobs done by untrained cellmates. 6 prisons in all will get tattoo parlors this year. Inmates will be trained to run them, but the government will hold censorship control over designs that glorify violence or gangs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most recent census identified nearly 44 million Americans without health insurance, but that's only half the story. A report released this month from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation says nearly half of them, almost 20 million in all, have jobs but no benefits. This dispels the myth that uninsured must also mean unemployed. In 37 states and the District of Columbia, one in every 10 working adults has no health benefits. But the problem is worst in Texas, where 1 in 4 are uninsured.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
As Ray Charles sang, them that's got is them that gets. And the getting was very, very good for those at the top in 2003. Forbes magazine's annual survey of wealth reports that there are now 587 lucky souls living in Billionaireville, up 10% over the previous count. These wealthiest of the wealthy added $500 billion to their personal stash of lucre last year. Among this group of swells are the Waltons, the reigning heirs of Walmart founder Sam Walton. Interestingly, the company that profits by paying poverty wages to its employees returns a king's ransom to those at the top. Forbes reports that of the 10 richest people on the planet, 5 are Waltons, each one sitting atop $20 billion in Walmart booty. Then there are the CEOs who lavish corporate cash on themselves. These dandies now average nearly $11 million in annual pay, even as they downsize their workforce, cut health care and pensions for the people who do the work, and ship our country's best-paying jobs off to foreign shores. Numero uno in corporate pay last year was Sandy Wheel, head of Citigroup. He only worked 9 months of the year before retiring in October, but he pocketed $30 million in salary. Wow, that's $111,000 a day. And that doesn't count the $14.7 million he took in other compensation, or some $285 million worth of stock he had been awarded. Well, say apologists for this system of royal pay, such is the way the free market works. Horse feathers. The supply of potential CEOs is huge, and the number of slots is very small. So if the free market really was at work, CEOs would be making an honest wage. But the system isn't honest. The pay of top bosses is set by board members handpicked by you-know-who, the top bosses. This is Jim Hightower saying, money flows uphill not because of merit, but because the system is rigged by those at the top.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void or prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at toyota.com/owners.
It's difficult to
enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make. Smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. The Mexican Air Force has figured it out. The Mexican Air Force says they've released footage roles by Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush are still gone. Still gone. They were supposed to fix this thing before the 2002 election. And the ACLU is suing them about this. They are still gone. And now they're going to take as many as 40,000 more people off the voting rolls in Florida. Jeb Bush has created a genuine banana republic down there. I mean, it's just absolutely a genuine banana republic. Metro police balk at plan to hunt illegal immigrants. This I thought was fascinating. This is in the Detroit News, and they are Metro Detroit officials are criticizing a federal proposal that would require local police to enforce immigration laws, saying the shift would ruin community relationships and hurt crime fighting efforts. And here's the bottom line. Do you know how many cops there are in the United States? Nationwide, you add up all the cities and all the state police, and according to this article, it is 600,000. There are 600,000 local and state police officers. Therefore, when Bill Clinton added 100,000 cops, which George Bush has rolled back, by the way, it made a significant difference. There's a lot of people. Anyhow, much of that work is currently being done by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Here's the deal. The Department of Homeland Security, in the 12 months that ended at the end of February, which is the most recent 12 months that they track, removed 180,000 illegal immigrants. This is a 21% increase in a year. But now what the Bush administration is saying is instead of having a federal agency track down illegal immigrants, we want to put the burden for that, and it is a significant burden, on local governments. We're going to let this be paid for by local taxpayers who are supporting local police or state taxpayers who are supporting state police. See, it's not a matter of you stop some guy at a traffic light and you say, are you an illegal immigrant or not? Because we don't have a law in the United States that says that you must have ID. You have to have a license to drive. But it is perfectly acceptable for you to walk down the street without identification in the United States. We have not stepped over that line into compulsory ID like they had in the Soviet Union, and they still have in Russia, for that matter. We have not stepped over that line. And so if a local police officer is charged with the responsibility of tracking down an illegal alien, I mean, there's a significant amount of work there. You got to find out, you know, who is this guy? What's he up to? What are they doing? Where do they live? It's investigative work. It's detective work. It's work that means it's time away from actually tracking real criminals engaged in real crimes. Not to say that illegal immigration isn't a real crime, but you know what I mean. I mean, but the bottom line here, well, let me quote Corporal Daniel Saab of the city of Dearborn Police Department. He says there's two problems. First of all, people would not want to work with us. It would make it very hard for us to do our job. In other words, the people in the community their sources of information on investigations into, you know, chop shops, people stealing cars and whatever, local crime. Some of the people in immigrant communities are just going to start saying, no, we're not going to talk to you, because you never know. I mean, they may have a relative who's an illegal. But the bigger issue is, he said it would double the work for us, too, just stopping somebody and say he qualifies for an investigation by the immigration department. It would not only tie us up for hours, but for days. Dearborn City officials, Dearborn is a suburb of Detroit, say the proposals come at a time when the responsibilities of police have multiplied in the wake of 9/11. Mayor Michael Guido says many cities still are waiting for the promised Homeland Security funding. In Ann Arbor, and so now what's happening is that in response to this, here you got George Bush, you got the administration saying, we want to move the burden, the taxpayer burden, we want to move the load away from the federal government, away from federal taxes, and onto the shoulders of local taxpayers. In Ann Arbor, Michigan, the city council has directed its officers not to enforce immigration laws unless a particular case affects public safety, which, after all, is their job, public safety. Mayor Gordon Kwan of Houston has ordered his department not to enforce immigration laws in major city police departments, including New York, Los Angeles, Boston, Chicago, and Denver, also oppose the tactic. So it's happening. Right across America, they're saying, no, we don't think this is a good idea. The Pentagon has been forced to withdraw a leaflet. This a story out of Afghanistan. And, what's going on? Who's in charge here is the question that this thing raises. What is going on? The U.S.-led coalition in Afghanistan was distributing leaflets that were essentially saying to people, if you don't help us find bin Laden, there's an election coming up. We've got to get this guy, or George Bush isn't going to get reelected. If you don't help us find bin Laden, we're going to cut off food aid to you that is coming from independent private agencies. The Red Cross is not going to be able to get anything to you anymore. Other private agencies are not going to be able to get anything to you anymore. Médecins Sans Frontières, I think I'm saying that right. The Doctors Without Borders is the French organization. It's actually an international medical charity. Found these leaflets and they notified the Guardian, which is the newspaper that published this story, and they said that this is going to endanger aid workers. 14 aid workers were killed in Afghanistan last year and 11 this year. These are not government employees. These are not soldiers. These are independent private people who are trying to do good in a difficult situation, trying to help people out. 14 were killed last year, 11 are killed this year. And now we've got the Army running around, the United States Army running around saying, they're in bed with us, they're colluding with us, we're all working together. If you don't get bin Laden for us, they're not going to give you any food. Or they're not going to help your village drill a well. Or whatever. Well, so last night the Pentagon said it would instruct forces in the field and those on future training courses not to repeat the mistake. Mistake? The leaflets were dropped by U.S. forces in Zabul province, which borders Pakistan and where the Taliban have regained control of several districts. One of the leaflets showing an Afghan carrying a bag of provisions reads, in order to continue the humanitarian aid, pass over any information related to Taliban, Al-Qaeda, or Gulbuddin organizations to the coalition forces. Shoot aid workers. They might as well have just said, shoot aid workers. 20 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Questions for Rumsfeld today. One vital question for Secretary Rumsfeld. Why is the White House requesting only $25 billion for the war for the fiscal year which starts in October, when the minimum cost for the coming year will be more than twice that level? Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz testified that as of last January, expenditures for Iraq exceeded $4.5 billion a month. That means that they're going to need at least $56 billion even before the decisions of the past month are factored into military spending plans, and costs could run well above that. The Pentagon has announced that we're going to have at least 135,000 troops stationed in Iraq for all of fiscal 2005. So, as the Center for American Progress points out, the mix of troops includes a significantly higher proportion of Guard and Reserve units than the pre-March levels. This operation tempo has increased significantly since January, and shows no sign of slowing down. $4.7 billion. And that doesn't even include repair and reconditioning of equipment. In other words, this $25 billion that they're asking for is nothing compared to what's really going to be needed. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the program. Jeff in Denver is on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Two things. One is, I think a challenge that is pretty interesting is to ask somebody, name a major issue about the Iraq war in which the Bush administration told the correct information beforehand.
Yeah, it's
Just one. Other than Saddam Hussein was a bad guy.
Yeah.
But another thing, did you hear Senator James Imhoff from Oklahoma?
I did.
Senators.
I did. I watched it live yesterday. My jaw dropped. Did you know that John McCain walked out of the room when he started that rant?
No, I didn't know that. And, well, one of the big things about this is, why do all these people forget about due process? Jim Imhoff, I mean, first of all, the Red Cross said that 70-90% of these people were arrested improperly.
Right, and but none of them had been convicted. He says these are murderers. You know,
he's convicted about due process. He says these are the guys with blood on their hands. But how does he know that?
Right.
Yeah. And so, come on, you know, people from that persuasion.
Well, what Imhoff has done is he has demonstrated that he has the same mindset that Saddam Hussein had. Which is who cares about the rule of law? If I think someone is bad, I will punish them. That's what he's saying.
Well, if he's running for Senate this year, I'm going to find out and donate to his opponent.
Yeah, I mean it's incredible. What state is he from? Oklahoma?
Oklahoma.
Yeah. That's what I thought. It's probably a fairly safe state, so he can be a right wing crank. Doesn't quite describe it, does it? I mean, this is
that was just completely irrational. I mean, it's like. There are people like McCain that you see, even if you disagree, you see he has a reason for coming to his perspective.
Yeah.
But Imhoff, it was totally irrational.
Well, what gets me is that the fact that McCain walked out on a member of his own party and did so as a display of walking out, and that wasn't covered. And then he actually met with a reporter out in the hall and said, you know, I just disagree with this. I had to leave. That I'm not quoting him, but words to that effect. The fact that that happened should have been, in my mind, you know, I think that should have been a bigger story than the fact that Imhoff said what he did. Because what it does is it demonstrates that there's a split happening in the Republican Party right now. And you've got this, you know, these extremists who are saying, you know, we don't care about due process. We don't care about constitutional rights. Yes, go Guantanamo Bay. Who cares about the, you know, the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the, you know, it's a Patriot Act all the way. And then you got some rational Republicans. I realize it's by and large an oxymoron, but, you know, like John McCain, who actually walk out on that. And I was just horrified that didn't get more coverage.
Yeah. And then this whole attitude, well, if they treat us badly, we should treat them badly. All it ends up is a spiral where you just dive down, you know, below the sewers.
Yeah, we have never done that. We have never sunk to the level of other people. We have always stood above that and said, you know, well, if you want to start a war, we'll have a war. I mean, you know, we've said that, we've never sunk to the level of those that we criticize. It's just not done. Jeff, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour at the Tom Hartman program.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Talks continue between the Communication Workers of America and phone giant SBC. All 102,000 line maintenance, directory assistants, and other technical staff scattered throughout 13 states will stay on the job for the time being. The deadline to come to agreement on a new contract expired this weekend, but is being extended on a day-by-day basis, so long as talks between the two sides, with the assistance of federal mediation, remain active. The CWA says it'll also give 24 hours notice before taking any job action now. In related news, one of SBC's major competitors is cutting back on staff. MCI announced this week it'll lay off 7,500 people by the end of the year. That's 15% of the MCI workforce and an increase of 3,000 cuts over and above those previously planned for the year.
A regional office of the National Labor Relations Board dealt a blow to Wisconsin United Food and Commercial Workers Local 538 with a ruling that could end union representation at the Jefferson Tyson plant. Workers there were on strike for nearly a year, ending last January after they accepted a four-year contract that differed little from the one that originally caused their walkout. According to the NLRB ruling, all 300 replacement workers hired during the strike must be made permanent. Now, replacement workers are lobbying the NLRB to deauthorize the Tyson Union. Only the 300 replacement workers and about 200 called-back strikers will be allowed to vote. Therefore, union members will be outnumbered, and if Tyson wins, they most likely won't have to rehire union members or give them back pay.
A jobs boom may be just around the corner in Canada, but only for tattoo artists behind bars. It's related to a pilot program starting this year by the Correctional Service of Canada. It's going to put tattoo parlors in prisons around the country. The ultimate goal is to cut the hepatitis C epidemic in the prison system, which is blamed in large part on homemade ink jobs done by untrained cellmates. Six prisons in all will get tattoo parlors this year. Inmates will be trained to run them, but the government will hold censorship control over designs that glorify violence or gangs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most recent census identified nearly 44 million Americans without health insurance, but that's only half the story. A report released this month from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation says nearly half of them, almost 20 million in all, have jobs but no benefits. This dispels the myth that uninsured must also mean unemployed. In 37 states and the District of Columbia, one in every 10 working adults has no health benefits. But the problem is worst in Texas, where one in four are uninsured.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And we're back to General Boykin. Can you believe it? This guy who says to an Arab that his God is bigger than their God. Yes, he, literally, that's what he said. I mean, is this a guy who has a male performance problem or something? I mean, it's anyhow, I'll give you the Boykin alert after. Let's take a call here. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. John in Santa Fe is on. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom.
What's up?
Yeah, I had, the execution of the American. I have a feeling that's going to cause Bush's poll numbers to jump a little bit.
Yeah, I think I think so too. It's the brutality of the other side. The more he can have a bad enemy, the more he can look like a good guy. I mean that's the basic formula in literature is that for a superhero to be a superhero, you have to have a supervillain.
And also that Bush responds well to that kind of thing. I just heard him on the radio on one of the news things making a comment about it, and he sounded very you know, a lot of conviction and forceful.
Yeah.
And he's good in that arena.
Oh, he's very articulate when he's into Righteous Anger. All of his malapropisms and his verbal dyslexia fall away, and the you know, the real George Bush, as it were, comes out.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. It seems like sort of on a mass level, if the American sort of limbic system is stimulated, that's good for Bush, whereas if it's more cerebral, that will help Kerry.
Yeah, yeah, it may well be, It's which means if there is an attack on the United States of any consequence between now and the elections, Bush gets reelected, and that's it's going to be interesting to see how people do respond in the polls to this, because if there is that rally effect, then you know, those of us who are willing to entertain conspiracy notions may say, well, now we know why George Bush refused to spend $7 billion, even though he's willing to spend $300 billion in Iraq, refused to spend $7 billion to protect our ports. You know, if, for example, a dirty bomb comes in a container and takes out Baltimore, like in that movie that Bruce Willis was in a couple of years ago or something like that. And then he gets a bounce in the polls and he gets reelected, you know.
Another thing, the Senator Imhoff, your previous caller, you're talking about. One thing I noticed when I saw that was a very strong underlying current of racism,
yeah.
In that he was basically all Arabs or all Muslims were the same.
Yeah, sure. That's the undercurrent that flows through much of this. I mean, we saw the same thing in the Vietnam War. You know, they were gooks, slant slopes, you know, whatever. They weren't human beings. And those wars that we have fought against people who are not Caucasians have had a qualitative difference. There's a kind of a different flavor to them. And I think it's because racism is still pervasive in our society, in our culture. I mean, I don't think that any of us are untainted by it. But I think particularly in the right, you find a startling amount of it, fairly blatant and visible. I mean, that was Nixon's Southern strategy back in 72, was, you know, hey, let's take the racist vote, let's get the racist vote, and he did it in large part because LBJ and Bobby Kennedy handed it to him in 1967, you know, 64, 65, and 67, with the various Civil Rights Acts and Voter Rights Acts opening up the South. They basically ensured that the Democrats would go down in flames. At least, you know, they figured it would only be for 5 or 10 years. But it turns out it was for, you know, it's been, what, 30 years, 40 years now. And the Republicans just capitalized on that racism. It's still, I lived in Atlanta for 16, 17 years. And two of my kids still live in the South. And racism is alive and well down there, I can tell you. And all over the country. So anyhow, John, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, 22 minutes before the hour. Jeff in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome.
How you doing, Tom?
Great. What's up?
Yeah, a couple of things. This is, I don't know, this might be a little weird, but I've been noticing when Bush gives a talk, he does weird things with his eyes. When he was talking about Rumsfeld doing such a great job, he says, "You are doing a superb job."
Blink, blink,
and
blink.
And his eyelids flutter.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you are doing a strong, you are a strong Secretary of Defense, and his eyes flitter.
Yeah. It's just like...
And I noticed that it's almost like he does it when he's not really saying what he believes.
Well, it was like Colin Powell when he was speaking before the United Nations. His head twitches to one side a little bit, and he coughs when he's lying. That was my assumption, when he was saying things that he didn't really and truly believe. And I think Bush does the same thing. He blinks a lot.
I noticed it when he does a press conference. And then the other thing was about McCain. Do you ever watch The Daily Show?
I do.
Comedy Central?
Yeah. Yeah, he was on night before last.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw it. I saw
where
it last.
He came out. He came out looking for the charts that Rumsfeld couldn't find.
Yes, the chart of who's in charge.
Right.
Who's in charge?
Right.
Yeah, that was a good.
It makes me think that it would be great. I think it might be great if Kerry picked McCain as vice president.
Well,
would shake things up. I mean, it would at least.
First of all, it's
both
not
sides together a little more.
Yeah, it might do that, Jeff, but I can tell you it's not going to happen.
Sure it won't happen.
You know, but McCain has some very conservative positions. I mean, the thing that a lot of people forget is that, you know, McCain is anti-choice. He's pro, quote, free trade, end quote. You know, in other words, he's in favor of multinational corporations running roughshod over the rights of Americans. He's in favor of tax cuts for the wealthy. He's opposed to the minimum wage. He's opposed to progressive taxation. The guy is a conservative.
I know. He's not. But at least he goes his own way. He doesn't just always walk the Republican line.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, he has a lot of integrity, I think.
I don't disagree with you, and I think a lot of it, and you know what happened to him in South Carolina when George Bush, I mean, he beat.
Oh, I know, he got, right.
He beat George Bush in New Hampshire, and then so Bush had to win in South Carolina, or there's no way he would become president, and so they went down there and they did these push polls where they called up tens of thousands of registered Republicans and said, if you knew that John McCain had psychiatric treatment as a consequence of mental illness as a result of having been a prisoner of war, would you still vote for him? If you knew that John McCain had fathered a black child out of wedlock with a black woman, would you still vote for him? If you knew that John McCain's wife had been unfaithful and had attempted to commit suicide, would you still vote for him? And these were the three big things, you know, that he was nuts as a result of. You know.
There's so much polarization now between Republicans and the Democrats, and I don't know what's going to happen to try to bring.
My point is that polarization is happening because you've got Machiavellian politicians, largely in the Republican Party. These folks who really believe the Leo Strauss notion. And of course, it didn't originate with him, but he popularized it. All the neocons cite him, that the means justify the ends, or the ends justifies the means, rather. That, you know, win at any cost because our cause is the right cause.
Ours is just and yours isn't. No, I understand that.
But if they're doing it in Iraq.
If he was to pick McCain, then maybe some of that would stop.
Yeah.
Maybe it would force. I mean, it's not going to happen, I know, but.
Yeah.
But
given the fact that he's not going to pick McCain, who do you think he might pick, and who do you think he should pick? I mean, you're in New Mexico. What do you think about Bill Richardson?
I don't want to see Richardson as vice president. And he's been very disappointing here.
Really?
He gets
a lot of really good press nationally. I mean, from here in Vermont, he looks like a really great guy.
Well, he's done. We'll see. I mean, you know, he's still got some time.
Yeah, politics is the art of compromise, too. I mean, sometimes politicians have.
No, I understand they have to compromise. He just. I would like to see John Edwards. I'm not real keen on Gephardt. He's maybe a little too liberal.
What does that mean?
Well, what does that mean?
I'm always curious about this. It's like, you know, I almost asked Chuck, you know, okay, you're a conservative. What does that mean? I'm not sure that these words have meaning anymore.
Well, I guess part of the problem is that he's been painted a certain way.
Yeah, I mean, Gephardt's...
And I'm afraid that picking somebody that's been painted that way will only hurt Kerry.
Okay, so it's not Gephardt's positions you're concerned about. It's electability.
I'm not concerned with Gephardt. He comes across as maybe too much of a bleeding heart.
Yeah, or too much in the pockets of the unions. I think is the way.
Well, that's the other. He's been entrenched so long. We got so many that are just entrenched.
I think that's just a marvelous thing. I think the reality of America right now. Is that the corporations have all the power and labor has virtually none, and that's why we are seeing the middle class get wiped out. And we need somebody to come along like FDR did and like Gephardt talks about and say, hey, it's time to talk about repealing Taft-Hartley. It's time to talk about giving back unions the ability to really and truly bargain in the United States and give corporations a run for their money.
Right. Well, I would like one of my questions is, it seems, I mean, Clinton kind of walked the fence. He wasn't really liberal, and he did a lot of things the Republicans liked. When do we get to swing the other way?
Yeah.
When do we get to swing back to the left some?
Yeah. Yeah, well, hopefully
when was the last time we swung to the left? Maybe with Carter?
Yeah. Yeah, well, to a large extent, yeah. I think, and Jimmy Carter was the last really high integrity president that we had, in my opinion.
Absolutely, he was.
He was a very good man. Jeff, thanks for the call. I appreciate
it.
Good to hear from you, and good to hear your opinions on all this. It's a tough thing, you know. Who should be the vice presidential candidate? Be interesting to see. The Los Angeles Times reports, this from the Center for American Progress, the LA Times reports that military sources say Lieutenant General William Boykin could be at the center of a controversy. See, Bush is never going to dump this guy because he's so into the evangelical thing. Rumsfeld has permitted Boykin to remain head of military intelligence despite last year touching off a firestorm by giving speeches in uniform. Now, this is where he stepped over the line, in the opinion of many people, myself included. They say, well, he's got the right of free speech. Yes, put on a business suit. Put on a pair of jeans. I mean, you know, if you want to go into a church and tell those people that the Islamic God is smaller than the Christian God, you know, you're entitled to do that, but don't do it wearing the uniform of the United States Army and representing yourself as a general in the United States Army when your job is to participate in intelligence and things that affect the Islamic world. I mean, just don't do that. But he did. And he referred to the war on terrorism in religious terms. Boykin said America was fighting the war on terrorism, quote, because we're a Christian nation and the enemy is a guy named Satan, end quote. He also said that while fighting a Muslim warlord in Somalia, he, quote, knew that my God was a real God and his was an idol, end quote. Senators were told yesterday. And again, this is, you know, why doesn't this stuff get more coverage? Clearly, because we have a strong conservative bias in the press here in the United States. Anyhow, senators were told yesterday that Boykin briefed a top Pentagon civilian official last summer on ways military interrogators could gain more intelligence from Iraqi prisoners. They didn't just bring this guy in and say, hey, what do you know about this, that? It was, how do you get more intelligence from Iraqi prisoners? How do we squeeze more out of Iraqis? And he told them. And then we see this stuff happen. Could there be does 1 plus 1 equal 2 any longer? Critics have suggested those recommendations amounted to a senior-level go-ahead for the sexual and physical abuse of prisoners. As one former military intelligence official said, quote, somewhere at the bottom of this, you'll find Cambone, the guy who testified yesterday and made that absolutely outrageous statement that to grant terrorists the rights and protections they deny others makes a mockery of the Geneva Convention. Cambone and his deputy, Boykin. Now, I have to admit, I didn't realize that Boykin worked for Cambone when I heard Cambone testify yesterday. I mean, now it's kind of all falling into place. Very interesting. It's very, very clear what's going on. Despite the Red Cross noting that between 70 and 90% of the detainees at Abu Ghraib were arrested by mistake, Inhofe goes off on these rants. Well, it wasn't just Inhofe. First of all, here's what Inhofe says. He said, these prisoners, you know, they're not there for traffic violations. If they're in cell block 1A or B, these prisoners, they're murderers, they're terrorists, they're insurgents. Even though there's been no due process whatsoever. But he wasn't the only one. Lindsey Graham, the Republican from South Carolina, who led the one of the impeachment things against Bill Clinton. I mean, one of the most partisan Republicans in the Senate said, quote, there's some Republicans who are playing on raw emotions that are undercutting us in terms of our international standing. Anytime Republicans bring up the idea that we are overreacting and that these abuses really are not that bad or others did worse, we should not even go down that road. Now, isn't that fascinating? Here you got a guy who way out on the right wing fringe, Lindsey Graham. I mean, we were talking a few minutes ago about John McCain walking out, but here's Lindsey Graham saying, we should not go down that road. We should not even go down that road. Yeah, well said. And then, of course, John McCain walking out of the room. But I can tell you, It's going to be Inhofe, who's going to be quoted over and over and over again on the right-wing radio machine all across America and the right-wing talk shows, TV shows and whatnot, and in the Washington Times and so on. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores? Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Seabirds in Scotland lose their leftovers and have to make a switch in their diets. I'm Richard Hoofs for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of seabirds like to follow commercial fishing boats to eat the undersized fish that get dumped overboard. One of those birds is the great skua, a big brown seabird that breeds on islands in the North Sea off the coast of Scotland. But the great skua has fewer easy leftovers these days. That's because fishing restrictions have cut the number of fishing boats on the North Sea. A scientist in Scotland says it looks like the great skua is making up for lost fish by eating other birds. Stephen Vautier is an ecologist at the University of Glasgow, and he's published a paper on great skuas in the journal Nature. Vautier says great skuas have probably always eaten smaller birds to some degree, but he says small birds make up a growing proportion of the skua's diet since the decline in commercial fishing activity. Vautier says the skuas often kill puffins, fomars, and black-legged kittiwakes that also roost in colonies on the Scottish Isles.
They tend to wait for the birds to come back to the colonies. The skua is effectively hanging around the colonies and looking for either chicks or for adult birds. They might be feeding on seabirds further out to sea. We don't know that because we couldn't very easily observe what was happening out at sea.
Vautier says the fishing restrictions in the North Sea are designed to restore populations of cod and herring.
We need to conserve our fish stocks not only for environmental reasons, But also from an economical point of view, as many people rely on fishing as an industry.
Vautier says rebuilding healthy populations of fish in the North Sea is essential to restoring some stability for commercial fishing and for birds like the great skua that like to eat fish as well. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 4 minutes before the hour. Payday loans leeching the poor. This is just, sometimes you see symptoms and there's the underlying cause. People think that the symptoms are the problem, but the symptoms are, this is a symptom of the problem. And the problem is conservative economic policies. The problem is, Bushonomics, voodoo, what Senior Bush called voodoo economics has taken hold. And these guys really and truly believe this bizarre religion. I mean, you heard in the last hour, Chuck Moore's raving about it. These guys really believe this. They really believe it. That if you simply leave it all to the capitalists, that everything will work out just fine. Just benevolent laissez-faire capitalism. Now, the reality is that always, throughout the history of the world, what we've seen is that one of the functions of government is to balance the power of wealth, and that you simply must do it. And if you don't, you end up with a dictatorship of the rich. It's called feudalism. It's no less a dictatorship than a dictatorship of the militarists. And here we have now another indicator that America is fiscally sick. Slate magazine is, the online slate.com reports that U.S. consumer debt is growing at an alarming rate. More and more Americans are resorting to using payday loans. These are loans with interest rates that are so high that they're higher than loan sharking. Loan sharking is illegal, but because this kind of stuff is done by, banks and things and corporations that are authorized, it's legal. But we're talking about annual interest rates that top 500%. Borrow $200 today, pay back $250 a week and a half, 2 weeks from now. 500% interest rates. 10 million people took out a payday loan in the last month of last year. 10 million people. We got to fix this. We got to fix this, friends. And to fix it, we have to get politically active. You and me. Thanks to Louise for producing the show today, to Brad Walrod in New York for our music, to Shelby and RadioPower.org for streaming us around the world, Ben and White Rose Society for our archives. Thanks to Jay for composing and playing our music. And thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique.